Hello and good day. My name is Father Mark Kramer. I am a parish priest at Good Shepherd Church here in Edmonton, Alberta. If you have no idea where that is, the easiest way to understand where Good Shepherd is if you know where West Edmonton Mall is, because everybody knows where West Edmonton Mall is. It's just south of there. I have the great privilege of also, by being the priest there at Good Shepherd Parish, to be the priest chaplain, so to speak, through Oscar Romero High School. And I'm just taking the opportunity today to, with one of the students here, to we've read a book together and we want to just kind of discuss it. The book is called The Catechism of Hockey by Alyssa Bormi. And what she did is she just took her love of hockey and her experience of hockey and how that has helped her to understand the Catholic faith, but also to explain the Catholic faith to others. And so we're just taking the time to sit together and discuss our experience in the book. I'm expecting fire and brimstone from my guest, but I'll let him introduce himself. Go ahead.
So I'm Aaron Ferreira. I'm a student that currently attends at Blessed Oscar Romero High School. I'm in grade 11, and I sort of very kind of part of the school. So I'm on the student council, so we do lots of organizing events for the school and things like that. I'm also part of a lot of the sports teams, so I definitely do a lot of work within the school. And yeah, I'm here to talk about the Catechism of Hockey, which relates to me a lot because I've always been a hockey player my entire life pretty much, and up until now I'm still playing hockey, and yeah, it's definitely shown very good insights about the faith and how, like, it's so similar to how we look at hockey and how it is connected to the ideas of the faith. But yeah,
well, since you already started, why don't you talk a bit about how hockey has affected your own life, which been your career in hockey. Why don't you talk about that a bit more?
Well, my career in hockey has been ever since the beginning. It's kind of the main thing I love about hockey so much is like the feelings you get when you play. So one of the most memorable feelings for me is like when you score a goal. It's just when that puck goes in the net, it just feels so, there's just this amazing feeling that's really hard to explain, that feeling of when you're scoring a goal. Also when the team kind of, everyone has to work together as a team for the team to succeed, because it's not going to work when just one player is good or two players are good. The whole team has to really work together, and it's quite an amazing feeling when it all kind of comes together as a team. There's also lots of like going through championships and tournaments and things like that. There's a sort of bonding between the team that's really quite amazing. So I've always liked the feelings that are associated with hockey.
So what position do you play?
Me, I'm a defenseman. So
are you a defenseman?
Yeah.
You know, if you can't see this poor laddie, he looks more like he's a forward and a glory hound, but he's a defenseman. So yeah. I mean, you don't get all the glory and all that, but you do a lot of the work. Like a goalie.
Yeah, it's a lot of, you have to be able to make sure that the other team doesn't score, so that when you score, you stay up on top. And
the cool things about defensemen is they can skate backwards faster than forwards can skate forward. Lots of times. It's lots of fun. You used to hit a lot more oftentimes as a defenseman. That used to be what position. I'm not as skinny and young and youthful as Aaron is, but when I played hockey before, I loved it because I'm less of a more slow twitch kind of muscle guy. So, you know, I just never was go, go, go all the time, but I had the energy to go. And as a defenseman, and to fight and do all that kind of stuff that goes with that, to fight to get to the corner before the other guy gets around you and stuff like that.
Make sure that you get there first and that they don't let them in the crease, and make sure they push them out.
Have you been defenseman all your career?
Yes, I have been all the way up until this year. I did try forward a little bit this year, kind of flop back and forth to get forward a try, but I've always been a defenseman. It's kind of just, it's got a good feeling to it. I've always been like naturally just a good backward skater and been able to. It's a lot more decisions. Like you got to be able to see the passes and make sure the puck gets out, rather than in the forwards. They really got to set up an offensive push.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you feel comfortable there, Aaron, and I put that as in brackets in my question sheet, you know, share with us, because we're not just talking about hockey, though we'll do a lot of that today. We're also talking about your own faith. Just wanted to ask you, share your background and tell a little bit about yourself. The first question would be, if we're talking about the catechism of hockey, so there's a Catholic sense, so just asking, are you Catholic? Are you Roman Catholic?
I am a Catholic. I don't practice that often, usually because my family's always so busy. We don't go to church. Like, we haven't been to church in forever, it seems. But I am confirmed as a Catholic, so I have received my confirmation.
Okay, and you mentioned you don't go to church every weekend, but do you find that you practice your faith, or is it something that's more just there?
Right now, I find it's just something that's kind of just there. I haven't put much effort into it, but yeah.
Okay, cool. At least we know where you're at. And I guess a question is not, we've asked it, but in a sense, but it's good to ask. It's the final question here, just talking about that, is where are you on in your faith journey? Like, it's a very personal question, but where are you in your faith journey?
Yeah, right now I feel like it's almost like I'm at the beginning of my faith journey. I find that I haven't really started things yet. It's I feel like I could see that there might be something there, and that soon when I get around to it, I think I'm going to try and see what the faith is all about and try and figure things out and really kind of see what it's all about. But I haven't really gone into it. I haven't dove into the whole faith yet.
But you definitely dove into hockey, so you get that. Okay, awesome. What's good. So in the book itself, she, the author, uses a lot of analogies that have to do with hockey. Right. What did you find were a couple of the analogies that really you found insightful, that really made you think?
One of the big ones I found was this chapter on the rules. The chapter is called The Rules, and it talks about how a lot of things about, like, the commitments. So when you, it first talks about in hockey where you have to, like, commit not just on the ice but off the ice. So there's lots of things, like, if you want to be, like, in good shape, you got to eat healthy and you got to train outside of the rink. You got to show up on time, get ready for the game, and all these things, right? But it's often that people, they ask, like, oh, why in the faith I have to be at church early or practice my faith outside of Mass and things like that. It really shows that, like, through the hockey, how you see how when you eat healthy and you show up on time and you train off the ice, it really helps when you're on the ice. So kind of I found really that connection that people don't see is that when instead of just going to church, when you pray and practice the faith outside of the church, it really helps when you go to Mass, and it gets that understanding of the faith.
We look at Mass as practice, but practice is before the game. The Mass, I guess, if you're going to church and Mass and living the faith, would be something that was more like practice. It's those things you do together to practice the faith, but also the things that you do just in your normal life. She shares an experience she had when John Paul II, when he passed away, many people went to Rome, and she shared that experience where she was in a line to see his remains, his body, and people were just going and showing their respects, and it was so tightly packed that when people helped people to move forward, everything worked that way. There were people, for whatever reason, that had to go ahead and was sneak through, and people had to make room and all that. But she was just using that along with what you just talked about, Aaron, is that everything affects everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if it was in that chapter or another chapter, she talked about if you decide to stay up late and, you know, and party, say, you know, and then you go and play a game, you know, you're going to affect your entire team, you know, because you're not ready, you're not in shape, you haven't eaten well, you know, obviously with partying and drinking and so forth, you take a lot out of your body, so that's why a lot of people they sleep before the game, they make sure, that kind of stuff, so everything that you do affects everybody else, so, and then that commitment thing was interesting, And I've heard that said before, but not just in this book. When one of my previous secretaries in a parish that I worked in, she made the comment that we Catholics don't ask enough of people.
Yeah.
Because she had a daughter in dance and had sons in hockey, and they ask a lot. Like, she used the example, and it's very true here, too, in different ways, is the amount of commitment. You have to be at practice before a certain time. You have to. You find that here, too? They expect you to be at practice when it happens, and, you know, you need to be before. You need to be there. The game not on just on time. You have to be there before. You know, there's, because otherwise you're not ready. You're not in the zone. But she also made the extra that you do. Like, often a lot of hockey will demand you work so many hours during the year to make sure we can get extra ice time and all that and pay for that. And so she mentioned that in her own community where she's from, they would write a check for the equivalent of the amount of money that they would have, that would their volunteer hours would pay for. And then if you did that, then you got the check back. And you just thought, like, wow, how much would the Catholic Church be transformed if we made a commitment to do 40 hours of work to help the church and her mission and to do service kind of things. And then people did it. And even that commitment of being there. But then we don't expect that same level of commitment when we do church. And it shows. You see, that's the thing. If we did that in hockey, it would be horrible. People realize, oh no, we got to do this. Otherwise, we're not going to play to the excellent level we can. We're not going to be able to be there and be there for everybody. But we do it at church all the time. In fact, I remember I sat in my office at Good Shepherd Church one time watching people come into the church and leave, and I realized if I didn't know what time Mass started, I would not know what time, because people were just coming. They were going all throughout Mass. You know, some people come early. Most people will come just on time. If you come there 5 minutes early, you can get a parking spot and you can get into the church and you can get a seat. If you come there at the hour, then maybe not, but definitely 10 minutes after you won't. But in hockey, you have to be there at a certain time before. And it builds a good discipline, because you do that, then you're ready. You're there, you know, and that kind of stuff. What else did you find, like, about the, you know, it was an important one for you, so was there anything else?
There's one about, let's see here. It talks about this, chapter on the slap shot, where this one kid, he goes off and the older players, they teach him how to take a slap shot. Whereas, like, all the other kids, they didn't get that opportunity. So the one kid, he got a, took a week and he developed the skill of a slap shot, and then now he's got this amazing shot that he can use in a game that's very effective, and he's developed this talent and skill that's very, it's quite amazing, right? And then, but the interesting thing though is that he uses it with humility, so it's, he doesn't just keep the power of this slap shot to himself. He kind of shares with the team so that he uses it for the good of the team by, there was an example that he could have taken a shot, but instead he saw his open teammate and he passed it to him, and then the team scored. So instead of him scoring the goal and, or I should say taking the chance at scoring a goal, he passed it to a teammate where he knew that even though he wouldn't be scoring, the team would be scoring it. They'd be winning as a team, and how he wasn't just going out there and saying, oh, I have all this skill, I have the slap shot, where, like, he still wanted the team to win as a team, rather than him just being, have all the fame for himself. Really kind of putting that, the energy for the whole group, rather than just for himself.
So obviously that had impressed you. What about that impressed you? What did that, about that made you think more of the faith and the importance?
Well, I think that some people, through the faith, they have this, they may understand it a little better, and then when they, you don't want to just keep that understanding to yourself. You want to kind of share that wisdom with everyone else and kind of bring everyone else, like, in the church, just bring them all up with you and kind of help the understanding of the faith between everybody kind of just come up. And I thought that was a really interesting analogy, is that we should be sharing and talking about our faith as something to learn from each other and things like that.
But yeah. Cool. So not always do we always agree with everything someone says. Sometimes certain points people bring up, we feel we want to challenge, or we absolutely disagree, though. Yeah. Aaron's a very nice guy, so I don't know if there's anything that he wants to absolutely disagree with. He's so polite and kind and gentle. But the thing is, was there a couple things that you found that you went, oh, I don't understand, or you really disagreed with, or wanted to challenge?
The one chapter, it was talking about it's called the ticket. It talks about how they almost make a hockey pilgrimage. Mm-hmm. And they kind of, there was this story about this daughter and granddad, and they went back to this, I think the granddad saw this, must have been an Olympic game, I think.
What Aaron, because he's so young, he doesn't remember. When the United States of America, there was this whole section, I can't remember all the details, we can pull it out of the book, but it's talking about the miracle. It's the American team was fighting against one of the most dominant teams in the world, which was the Russian team during the Olympics.
Yeah.
And so it was just that their granddad had a ticket, and he had seen the game where he saw at the Olympics that were happening in Lake Placid area, and then they had the chance to see the game where the Americans, to everybody's amazement, were able to beat the Russians in that game. Mm-hmm. And so it was just one of those things that they were the underdogs. It was just, they were just able to come together as a team and beat what would have been the dominant team. Like, nobody thought anybody could challenge them. Mm-hmm. And so it was one of those seasons, and it was just, for Americans everywhere, it was just like, wow. And for hockey people, mm-hmm. just to see a team that may not have had all the things that you mm-hmm. think the bona fides, but was able to come together and...
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things with the team is that they hadn't played together before they came together with the Olympic thing. But they acted like they had played together all their lives. And so it was a neat experience. So anyway, sorry. A little bit of insight, background.
But yeah, I was just talking about how they kind of went back to go back to the actual arena and see the what it was. Let me think here. It was, they went back and they kind of talked about kind of like this almost feeling of nostalgia, kind of going back. And I feel like it's a good analogy, but coming from someone like playing hockey, I find that I don't really, it's almost like I'm always, when I think of hockey, I think of like the game and like all the games that like I've played and whatnot. I don't, because for me, I play a lot of hockey, but I don't really watch a lot of hockey. So like, finding that connection was kind of hard for me, because I didn't really see kind of that sort of the value of taking that pilgrimage to see this game is quite the same as kind of like the feelings you get from actually being in the game yourself. But I feel like this would really connect with someone that does a lot of watching hockey. I find that would connect with them a little bit more, but for me it was kind of hard to see the connection there.
So have you never had the opportunity to go to see something that was historical in that sense? You know, be mm-hmm. part of something that was historical mm-hmm. in terms of hockey or something else maybe?
Because I've seen Oilers games in Edmonton. I've seen those, but I haven't seen like any big sporting events or things like that. I've never really been to that, so. That could be why I'm like not getting the connection there. But
when I was a kid, mm-hmm. my parents talked and remembered what they were mm-hmm. doing, what they were doing when John F. Kennedy was shot.
Because
they experienced that. Now, I remember hearing them talk about that. And because I'm an emotional mm-hmm. person, I got the feelings and all that. But to them, it was one of those things that everybody knew exactly what they were doing the day that happened. Mm. It was such mm-hmm. a major thing. And I think that's what she's tapping into for certain experiences with certain sporting events, you know, and certain things that it is one of those things that taps back into memory. Right. Even though you may not know the exact day and time, you remember what was happening. Now, two things that come to mind right now that, for me personally, that I remember. I remember the day 9/11 happened. I was my first year in the seminary as a priest, training to be a priest, and I remember exactly what I was doing. I walked out of my room and went into the TV room, and my friend, who's ordained now, he was watching the towers, and how everybody, it was just, the shock had gone through the building where we were, and just, we were just, but I could ask anybody that was alive at that time or old enough, they would remember what they were doing on 9/11, because it was such a shocking kind of experience. So in that way, you know, to the point that I went to the memorial in New York City, and I went down to the museum they have, and yeah, it's like going back to that day. And there's parts of it that were really, really hard, because it brings up all these emotions, and then emotions of the time. So things like that can have a powerful effect on people, even though they happened like before you. I don't know. Do you remember 9/11? Were you, how old would you be?
I don't even think I was born.
2001. So you probably weren't even born.
Yeah.
So you see, I remember my parents talking about JFK. So there are things, and they will happen in your lifetime. And then sometimes there will be sporting events. Sometimes there will be major world events that you will remember. They will just forever stamp your memory. And that's what she was trying to do that. And to remember, even if it wasn't that. My parents talking about the assassination of JFK, even though it was just what they were doing. It was just them telling me that story remains this important thing that happened. A more fun story that is the same for me is that I was ordained a priest on June 19th, 2006, the day the Oilers lost to Carolina. So I remember, as my ordination, when I became a priest, was coming up, we were watching hockey games because the Oilers had gone all the way to the finals. And I just, things like this were just hilarious. The Archbishop of the time, Cardinal Collins, every single homily he had, he was always saying, I don't know if I can ordain Father Mark on that day. Cause that's the ordain. The Oilers were playing. And so it was funny, though, like the Saturday before, Saturday or the Friday before, I remember going and watching the game and going on the streets of Edmonton, and every single corner almost, there were people out with signs wearing jerseys and people were honking. I remember all throughout the city as I drove home from wherever I was. I don't remember where I watched the game, but I drove home and I was at the seminary and I was just talking to someone outside, and in the background you could hear honking. It was insane. And the day I was ordained a priest, of course, I was focused on becoming a priest. But my brother, he said it was, he just came up to me afterwards. He says, the funniest thing, because one of the guys that was in the music ministry at the Mass was wearing an Oilers jersey and he was listening to the game. My brother knew the exact score when the goals had happened because of his reaction. But there actually were people listening to the game, even some clergy. There were people who came right on time to my ordination because it was just, that was what was happening. A number of people had gone and watched the first period or part of it before they came over to the ordination. I always joked to have a video of my ordination. We really should have it pop up what the score was and stuff like that and pop back down. Because it was just one of those things. I was in the moment. But all that was happening around me. But because of that, I mean, I literally know who won, what the score was. And I know, people always say it's been 13 years. Yeah, I know. That's exactly how long I was ordained a priest. So there will be moments like that that just kind of mark. And when you tell that story, it makes you laugh. I was being ordained a priest while the Oilers were losing. Sorry, it wasn't my fault. But it was fascinating because I remember all that was coming around that. And when we went for that run a few years back, that first round and into the second round, I remembered. And the whole people got a little crazy. And, and because it's just one of those things. This is something's happening. You know, and so it's... it's a neat sort of experience.
Yeah. It's I definitely, from hearing what you've been just talking about just there, it's kind of, I'm sort of seeing like that connection, like this one little moment, it may be short, but it just has so much, like, such a huge impact that it's just, you just remember every little detail because it has, leaves such a big impact. And it kind of, it's almost like it'll, like, moments like that kind of bring people together and kind of bring that common sharing of a belief all at once again.
Yeah. And what the Oilers were believing, that they may get and win the Stanley Cup again. But it's funny, though. I mean, I have a priest friend of mine who is a big Oilers fan, and and so he's always giving him a hard time. When he was being ordained a priest, he was ordained after I was. I always joked with him that that's the year they'll go all the way. They didn't even come close that year. But it was funny to watch his face, because he was watching the game. He, at that time, he watched that game. So he remembers watching that game because it was such a... That's interesting. Even that, for me being ordained, that same day, people remember watching that game. You know, whether they were sad or happy and all that. But I find it funny that very few people know who both people were playing in a year for a Stanley Cup. But I happen to do. I know the day that Carolina won. I think the score was like 3-2. I think that was the score. I wasn't watching the game. But it's interesting that I know who both parties were playing, who won, who lost. They, most times, you know who won, maybe. But you don't always know who lost. So
yeah,
it's interesting. But it's fascinating. What, was there another one that kind of struck you? You said Aaron had to go raises his fist and say, no.
There was the one on the evangelization that was a little...
Wasn't as strong as you would like it to be?
Yeah, I mean, it does mention how it's a very controversial kind of topic. If I go to, where is it?
It talks about teamwork.
But maybe, like, I have a question how you feel about evangelization.
But sharing the faith?
Yeah.
What do you mean? That's a very big question. I feel good about it. I think it's a good idea.
Yes, like being a priest, right? Like the importance of someone that, 'cause you do want to, like, share your values and beliefs, but you don't really necessarily want to impose them on other people, right? Yeah. So you do, where is it saying here? Like, I just kind of feel like it's something that, yeah, you have to share your faith, but at, like, what point do we start imposing ourselves on other people? Kind of, sort of, in there.
Well, part of this, Aaron, is that we live in a time where we're extra sensitive, mostly because the people who want to impose their own particular view don't like others presenting counterpoints.
Right.
I think what's important is that you share. Like, you love hockey. You sure you love hockey. People don't have to like it or not. Mm-hmm. That's not imposing. You're sharing something you love.
Yeah.
Like, you find that in some aspect of the faith or the faith itself, yeah, it's really helped me. Or you've said to yourself, that, no, I haven't really pursued it, but I think that's something worth, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to make that effort. I think saying that and sharing it is nothing wrong with that. I think it's more what evangelization is. Oftentimes, it's mere presence. I think the greatest evangelizers are those, often St. Francis is attributed with the quote, preach the gospel, and if necessary, use words. But part of it is just living a gospel life, being a person who lives authentically what Christ asks of you. That speaks louder than simple words. But you need to use words. Sometimes people have difficult questions. So as a priest, people will come to me and say, oh, what about this? Or we'll have a conversation, you know, because sometimes we need to have that conversation. Lots of times I think people know something's not working. They just need someone to help them to... Right. But I always, often, when I talk to people, and they're talking about how they're living their lives, I use the Dr. Phil question. So how's that working for you?
Right.
And sometimes it's not. Or I just ask a question. I remember long before I was Catholic, I was still Mormon at that time, and we were just talking about whether we should keep sex till marriage or not. It was the kind of conversation. And I asked the people that I was around. I said, oh, well, let's ask a simple question. If you know now... If you knew then what you know now, would you wait till marriage to have sex? And almost every single person said yes. Because you want to get involved and do that, but they realize this is such an important, such a binding thing, such a great gift you can give to someone else, that, oh yeah, you know, I did it. I mean, I felt pressured, or I just, you know, I felt I had to do it. Mm-hmm. But women and men, the number of people, a small number of people, they said, yeah, I'd wait, because it isn't giving me anything that much at the time, you know, maybe pleasure, but it's most of the times we seek things like that more for more than that, but it doesn't give that. So when I've talked to people about that, how's that working for you? It's not meant to be a judgment thing. It's, but you can just evaluate it. Mm-hmm. No, it's really not giving me what I want. Mm-hmm. Then, and I use that a lot when I talk to people, when I talk to people about their sins or struggles that they have, you know, just pointing out, you know, realizing how that helps or doesn't help makes a big difference. But sometimes you just need someone to ask that question.
Yeah.
Or said, you know, you don't have to do that. You don't, you can live another way. She talks about that in the book. I thought it was fascinating. Yeah. And when she talked about teaching the faith, we realize rules are absolutely important in hockey. If you don't know the rules, you don't live by the rules, then you're dangerous. And she said, you need to have danger in a certain sense, but when you live by the rules, you can be assertive and aggressive, but you're living within the rules, and that's okay. I mean, you can get hurt a little bit that way sometimes, but you'll definitely get hurt if you go outside the rules, because the rules are meant to be a protection. And the same thing is, and she uses that as an analogy, talking about the teachings of the church on not just sexuality, but everything, is that when we have those things, and you got the rules. Mm-hmm. You can learn the rules, and you can choose to live them or not, but when you live the rules, and I found that what's fascinating about the gospel, when you actually live the rules or the principles, you find they give life, and they're free. You know, you don't feel bound. Like, oftentimes, most of us do most of the things we do because we feel we have to.
Yeah.
You know, and you no, you don't. You know, and sometimes it takes great courage to go act against this thing, but that being said, you know, you, when you do that, you know, it gives you an incredible freedom. Like, there's a quote, and I bookmarked it, and it talks about that. Let me pull it up here. At the very beginning, by an author, J.K. Chesterton, he made the comment that there's nothing that the new generation pursues. It's in the foreword of the book. It's absolutely the first thing he talks about. There's nothing that the new generation pursues more eagerly than this sort of sports and games. And there's nothing that is full of elaborate restrictions and conditions. And he ends it. He said, we'll apply this he will apply his anarchism, which means against the rules and stuff, to love, say, but not to lawn tennis. Lawn tennis is one network of rules as close as the net itself, and far closer than any of those old Christian nets that were cast out by the fishers of men. If there are 10 commandments of God, there are considerably more than 10 commandments of golf or hockey or whatever sport. And it's interesting that it was a different person who did the foreword, but it made the comment that, yeah, I mean, we have this kind of natural reaction in our modern age. It's not even yours. This is of a generation before, and I think your generation is kind of realizing that our generation kind of screwed up really bad. To be fair, I mean, the greatest generation screwed their children, and their children are now screwing you guys in different ways. Because what we did is we just didn't teach them. See, I'm not part of that generation. I'd be part of the generation that got taught by the greatest generation, or the generation after that. But the thing is, though, it's they did great things, but they didn't pass that on. So that's the thing. Like, when you get rules, like with hockey, is what we're talking about, then you know how to play hockey. Then you can just play the game.
Yeah.
See, the moment you play hockey, you can just let it go. And he uses another analogy, J.K. Chesterton, about on the edge of a cliff, you have this beautiful fence that keeps the children. They can go crazy.
Yeah.
Because they have these fences, that boundaries. But the moment you take that away, they're all clustered together, afraid to go to the edge. Whereas if you have these boundaries, then you can do it all within that. And with children, as when they're young, you need to teach them in age appropriate. But as they get older, you need to teach them these things that will keep them not only safe, but allow you to live. See, rules give life.
Yeah.
Is what the one thing she kept saying over and over again is that rules allow you to live. And it's true. If you play hockey, you imbibe, you know the rules. But the rules allow you to play hockey without having to worry. It provides structure. It provides boundaries. You can be safe. I remember playing floor hockey with one seminarian one time, and he was just being roughhousing and stuff like that. But he was being in such a way that it was dangerous. I said, "What's your problem?" Like, I have no problem with guys being rough a bit, but he was going crazy. Well, it's things like stick handling or you know, high sticking and all these kinds of things. No. You can rough people up, but you do it within things. That's what checking is for. I remember my dad. He was so funny because, I don't know, I was a bit soft when I was a kid, I think. But he always, he said, you know, I got upset because I was getting checked all the time. So you don't like checking, skate faster. And it was just, checking's part of the game. You learn to get out of the, you learn to move quicker, if you're forward more, and all that. And you learn to check well. So you're not hurting people, but you're being aggressive and assertive in a real way, you know. So it's these rules are wonderful, but we haven't taught them, and we've done you young people a disservice. Because people say, oh, they poo-poo, but they replace that. Like, they don't really give you something. And I remember being taught nonsense. Utter nonsense by people, because we don't assert the teachings of the faith. Someone will assert something, and then what do? You just adopt what the whole culture is doing. And if they're going over the cliff, you get that. So I was taught nonsense when I was in high school that this wasn't true. But yet, you don't know any better, and so you do some of that. You don't realize until afterwards, and once you acquire habits, and all of a sudden, I remember one priest came to my class and he spoke, and he was asked about all sorts of things. And the thing I remember, because I was a teenager, was the aspects on sexuality. And I went, oh, that's wrong. I talked to another friend of mine that was an adult. He said, oh, yeah. He said, oh, I didn't know that. Because I was doing some of those things, so I just stopped or tried to. But I've been surprised as a priest how many young people I shouldn't be doing that. But I've seen on the other side, of young men and women who know what chastity is about preserving themselves in a sexual way and practicing good things like that. And they have so much freedom because their libido, their sexual desire is normal. Whereas we can feed it with all sorts of things. But most people just don't know. They go, it's nothing wrong with you being a sexual person. But there's all sorts of stuff that can overfeed. It's nothing wrong with being a human being, but you can overfeed yourself. I'm patting my stomach and I'm fat because I've eaten too many nachos and Twizzlers and so forth. But the thing is, though, I mean, there's consequences. And to be fair, it's funny, I laugh about this, because it wasn't until my 30s when I was in a car accident that a lot of my weight started to gain and stuff like that. I don't think it's solely that. My mother, a nurse, she's convinced that a lot of that affected my metabolism, and it could have. But the reality is, it's habits I took as a teenager of eating that have affected me now as an adult. As a teenager, you can eat tons and tons of stuff most times, on and off, and you're just building your body, you're growing. But the thing is, though, you don't, when you stop growing, the body will grow in different ways. You don't grow taller, you don't grow wider, you grow, you know, forward with extra weight. And oftentimes, as a teenager, you were running around doing more things, but those habits were more forced by my dad. He's the one that got me playing hockey, and I got out of hockey when I had to drive myself around. So I wasn't self-motivated to play hockey. So those things affect, but the habits persist. But the same is true with the moral life, not solely in sexuality, but in how we treat people, how we learn to talk to people. It took me years to learn good social habits, to be able to talk to many different types of people, to have what essentially is good boundaries. I mean, learning how to talk to people, learning how to treat people, dealing with my own anger is another one, I think. For men, I've always found that anger and sexuality are normal, very powerful forces. Those are the two kind of have to learn to get a hold on. But there's other things in how you live and act out your life. But I found, growing up Catholic and then becoming Mormon, then eventually coming back to the Catholic Church when I was in my late 20s, is the rules were helpful. Doesn't mean I didn't struggle. Sometimes I wanted to go beyond that, and sometimes I did. But the rules let me know where the wall was. Same thing with driving. The rules and the lines on the road and the fences and sometimes big signs, they're helpful. When you drive with that, after a while, you're okay. You know how to do things when you have to kind of change and move around, but you understand what driving properly in our country means. But unless you obey the rules and learn what the rules are and accept those, you know. And the same thing, we have such a rejection of all sorts of things. G.K. Chesterton, again, the same author, he made the comment that there's some people who go and see a wall and say, I don't see the purpose of the wall, and let's get rid of it. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, most good conservatives will look at the wall and say, well, why do we have the wall? And ask that question first. But some people just want to get rid of the wall because, yeah. Well, why do we need the wall? I don't know what the wall. Yeah, there's many things you don't know. I'm almost 50 years old, and as much I don't know. So I would say, oh, if the people are doing something away, let's find out why we're doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, before we decide to change it and throw it away. But you're living in the results of a culture that has thrown many things away more as a reaction, but not always a thoughtful process. We think now more backwards and trying to rationalize why we did the things we did. But most of it was an emotional reaction. Another priest author, Ron Rollheiser, mm-hmm. he made the comment that secularism is the petulant teenage child of Christianity. They're just upset at Christianity. So they're just reacting. Mm. They're not actually always thinking through everything. Uh-huh. So that would be more what... You know, good. But you know, the comments she makes about the rules are very good. And it's helpful when you play a sport. You go, oh, yeah, the rules are important. And you know, all these kind of things, learning how to live and do that so that you can play the game. But we don't often, we should be better about teaching the rules of life. The more complicated, there's more out of them in a sense. I mean, it takes a whole Bible and a sacred tradition of the church to teach them. But no, they work. And that's the only way you will know. If you play hockey, you obey the rules, you go, oh, these work, these are good rules. Sometimes there's minor tweaks, but we realize most of the time it's like, how do we just do it better? But even in NHL and stuff like that, in hockey, the rules are not usually changing a lot. They just, sometimes it's because the game slows down a little bit too much, but oftentimes they'll go back because they realize, okay, yeah, basically, and they do that all the time. They're trying to make it better for television, but the thing is, though, it's just, yeah, you realize the most important rules, they never change. But they're important. But we live in our world and how we live, we just go, you do you. Whatever you do is perfectly okay. But, well, the reality is that's not always true. Mm-hmm. If it's true and it works, okay. But that's why it's good to listen to these different kinds of belief systems and where they've had this experience and so forth. Religion has lots to say of how to live a good life. And once you do that for a while, say if you play hockey or another sport, you say, well, I can do this better. Uh-huh. At least you have an understanding of the good experience. And if you were to do it better, oftentimes it'll be just slightly or another game comes out of it that's different. But you've taken from, you know, the good that was there. The experience, the tradition. So that's what we disconnect. We just kind of go do you. And I've heard, and you can speak more clearly to this as a young person, a 17-year-old, is that a lot of young people are trying to do that, live their own life, but they have no freaking idea how to do that. Yeah. And it absolutely freaks them out. In fact, I've actually had young people get upset at their parents and they never gave them a religious faith because... And they never had that. They had nothing. You see, this is the problem, is you have nothing. And that's okay. Whereas if you give somebody a religious faith in a real way, you pass it on, you give them something, they can always choose to not do that or live differently. Mm-hmm. But you've given them something. It's like somebody who just gives you a puck and a stick and tells you nothing about hockey. Mm-hmm. You may discover some of the things, but at least teach you the essence of a game. You can choose, like I did, not to play it anymore. But because my dad gave me that opportunity, and he did it, he gave me that opportunity to learn, and I've learned so much from hockey and in life, and lots of good things have come out of it. I don't play it as much, and I play it from time to time in street kind of things. I'm just getting older, so it's a little different. But the thing is, though, hockey has given me so much, but I only have it because Dad really, really taught it. You know, I might have been different and not have left the Catholic faith when I was a young man if both of my parents had taught me the faith as much as my dad taught me hockey. That's, I think, the thing we need to learn is that if you're going to practice a faith, learn it and then teach your kids it. People sometimes make the excuse, and she brings it up in the book, that, oh, I don't have enough knowledge, but it never stops you with anything else. You teach them enough that they have enough that they can learn more.
Yeah.
If you teach them nothing, they have nothing. You know, and I think it's a fair statement that a lot of the kids here in this high school and beyond will probably get really upset at their parents because they give them nothing when it comes to a lot of life kind of things and what the goodness that can religion's faith can truly give us, you know. And with my parents, the same. I always laugh because the more I became a priest, the more my mother came back to the Catholic Church and starts living it a whole lot more. So it makes me laugh. And she didn't do that when I was really living profoundly the Mormon faith. When I came back to the Catholic Church, she definitely did. Good woman, and she brought the faith to my life in the first place. But it would have been, I wish that it was deeper. I mean, probably she taught it as deeply as her parents taught it. Because the reality, oftentimes, you go as deep as, unless you intentionally choose to do that. Like yourself, Aaron, if you decide to really embrace the faith and do that, you'll make that more intentional decision to do that more and to be deeper about it. And just teach them as much as you would teach them your love of hockey. Teach them your love of the church and Jesus and that kind of stuff.
So kind of like share all your experiences that you've had and kind of like the things you've been through, what it's taught you, what you've been able to learn and kind of things like that. And
No, with faith though, it's not just about knowledge. You need to teach them your love. If you have a love of God and you teach them your love. You've met God and this is how it's affected you, and you help them to learn how to love God. I did a quote in a homily this weekend from Saint Gregory the Great. He made the comment that you'll not come to know God by what you believe. You'll come to know God by how you love. And I think that's a valid point. Loving and action and living that out will make such a difference in the way you do that.
And I feel it's really hard to like tell someone how much you, how you love God or things like that. I feel like it's really, you almost have to show them just by through like actions and things like that to really show like how you like love God through your, by if they were to see you doing things in the faith that really just that love for God.
Yeah, absolutely. We do a prayer, and I'll see if I can remember it. It's by Cardinal Newman. And I have a problem with I'm a good Catholic. I remember things in context and when I'm praying at certain points or during Mass. But it's, Dear Jesus, help me to spread your fragrance everywhere I go. Flood my soul with your spirit and life. Penetrate and possess my whole being so completely that my life may be only a radiance of you. Shine through me and be so in me that every soul I come in contact will see no longer me, but only Jesus. Stay with me, so I may shine as you shine. Shine as to be light to others. The light, O Jesus, will be all from you. None of it will be mine. It will be you shining on others through me. Let me thus praise you in the way you love best, by shining on those around me. Let me preach you without preaching, not by word, but by example, by the catching forth, the sympathetic influence of what I do, the penetrating influence of the love, it's the influence of love that I have for you, you know. And so that's how it ends. But it's just how you act and how you live, and that they can see your love for God by how you speak, how you act, and how you think. That's by far the greatest and most powerful example. You know, it's funny though, you know, we use words a lot when I come to visit the high school, but some of the kids that come up to me have complimented me on my passion. And some of them had said, you know, you're a good person. It's simple things like that. I just try to do what I'm able to do. And not just for me. I mean, we all like to be liked and stuff. But if they can see a little bit of Jesus, then that's a good thing, you know.
Kind of brings like a warming to your heart, I would assume.
Oh, yeah. But it also is, he's done so much for me in my life. That if I can some way a little bit let others see no longer me but only Jesus and see Jesus, then they can meet Jesus. And I've had that happen to me where I've met Jesus in the loving actions of other people. And when you meet Jesus, then you have an opportunity to have a relationship with him and realize he is real. Like I had one of your fellow students ask me, why do you know God is real? And it was just, I know because when I've talked to him, had a relationship with him, he's had one back with me too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's more subjective, you know, for sure. But it just happens so much that it's like, it just amazes me. As a priest, sometimes God just kind of grabs me and focuses me in another direction. Okay, Lord, I get it. Oh, I remember once this dude tried to come talk to me when I was down in Wetaskiwin and I was away on World Youth Day in Brazil. And he went and prayed in the chapel. And he just, Lord, where are you? You know, help me. And he was just almost screaming internally. And all he felt was just, all of a sudden, his head was just grabbed. And it was just changed towards the cross. You know, God does that kind of stuff to let us know that he's real. You know, and as we live the gospel and as we have a relationship with him, it may not be that intense experience, but we realize and come to know that simply by feeling, but by action, the love and presence of God. And to be fair, would you not rather live in a world that there really is a loving God than live in a world where there isn't any? Mm-hmm. That must be the hardest thing for atheists. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we really wish that there were a world. I did my last podcast just talking about exorcisms and stuff like that, and I often found it incredibly funny that you go and so many people go see these horror films, and when the first thing you want to know is you really, really want to believe in that moment that there's a God, he'll protect you, but you go and see this without that, and the lack of a sense of that relationship, which takes time to develop and just to pay attention, has caused so much isolation amongst young people and old people. You know, so many people are just living lives of quiet desperation. When you come to know God, you just kind of relax. You know, it's going to work out. I need to do the things I need to do, but it'll work out, and we'll figure it out. And that's kind of life. I mean, I joke with the students here, it's like, yeah, calm down. You know, life will work out the way it needs to. But if you're close to God and you're striving to follow him best you can, everything will work its way through. Because you're just on the path going generally the right direction. It's the wandering and doing crazy things that sometimes just don't help you because it doesn't. It's not you. It's not who you really are. So, anyway, that's my rantings. But was there anything else? You know, the last question was, did the reading and thinking about this book inspire you to live a better life and or to be a better Catholic?
I definitely would think that it's definitely, from all the, like, all the stories and the analogies and things in the books, it's really showed me, like, almost like the importance of having a faith and the believing in it. I definitely do think it's encouraged me or shown me, like, the value of having a faith and being, like, all the things that I've learned and experienced going through hockey. It's kind of like you can get that same sort of thing or even a greater sort of thing going through the faith that by doing all these things and just kind of like the same sort of, like hockey, but not the same as hockey. It's still different. It's not like going to church is a sport, but it's like going to church is just this kind of, it's something that you, it's very, it's hard to explain just how much you can learn and how much it helps your life and how you can live through that. And I definitely think what we were talking about, the rules and things, and that the rules are like, the one of the things that stood out to me would be the, if without the rules, it's not hockey, right? So like, without all the rules and things with the faith, it's not the faith that really helps that strengthen that you need those there. Otherwise, it's not quite the same thing. But yeah.
Cool. So, is there anything you want to ask me? Or I've been interviewing you, and you've done pretty good. Was there anything you wanted to ask me? Or you asked me some questions already, so it's all good.
I definitely think that my question about the evangelization and things like that really showed me, like, people may think, like, oh, it's kind of imposing on other people. But I really think it's like an experience or something that you, like, that you love, and it's just you want to just spread that love around, and I feel like it's a great thing.
No, but the thing is, though, too, with it, if you realize that what you are spreading is good and will be helpful, then you're not going to care as much that other people get upset about it.
Because you know it's, like, from your experience, like, it's just a love. Yeah. It's just goodness, a good feeling.
You know, absolutely, especially if you know and then there's a truth to it, mm-hmm. that there's a goodness that will help. And the reality is some people are going to get upset, sure. Mm-hmm. But if it's going to help people, it's really going to help people, especially if you come mm-hmm. to know the truth of the gospel and it really helps. It's helped you, but it's also helps other people. Then sure, you'll be willing to take it a little bit that people don't like. You know, what you're saying, but it's okay. You know, you don't have to do it. Mm-hmm. That's part of it. People get all upset about, you know, you don't have to do it. If I'm convincing you or not, that's not my problem. That's your problem. But I mean, if I can help people, that's the thing. When I go talk to people, I counsel people all the time. I mean, if people want to follow the counsel, sure. And often I say, well, take it to God in prayer. You know, mm-hmm. it's not always like, I this is where I'm trying to give you good advice. I'm trying to help bring the gospel, the teachings of the church to bear, mm-hmm. what you're dealing with, and see how it helps you. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes God's answers to you kind of be a little off the normal kind of thing, but often they're in alignment. We're just working with who we are as human beings. We're all so different, but we're all human.
Yeah.
So what amazes me is that the teachings of sacred scripture, Old and New Testament, the teachings of the church, deal fundamentally with what it means to be a human being. It's true that different things, they didn't have cell phones back then, mm-hmm. which in some ways they didn't have running water neither, mm-hmm. Things of that nature. But the thing is, though, the principle is how to live and be the best human being wherever we are. We can learn so much as wisdom, and then mm-hmm. living that wisdom out where we're at, there's so much we can learn. Like when I read the Proverbs, which is just after Psalms in the middle of the Old Testament, one of the first things they did, almost in the beginning, I can't remember what the particular chapter was. It was wine, women, and song. And I just started laughing, so nothing's changed. People have trouble with alcohol or different versions of drugs. They have trouble with how they appropriately deal with their mm-hmm. own sexuality. And they just have trouble with partying and not dealing with life and growing it. So these are just some mm-hmm. of the things that doesn't change. There's different circumstances, different things. Mm-hmm. But how do we live and enjoy life? Mm-hmm. But also what those rules are. And the commandments actually, they're not that restrictive. There are very few of them, really. But what they do is they allow you, they restrict or contain. And that's another piece that they mentioned in the book.
Yeah.
When we talked about sexuality, and it was a really neat quote by J.K. Chesterton again. Worth reading. It's lots of fun. He's hilarious, too. But he said it's that sexuality is so beautiful and awesome and dangerous. Mm-hmm. That's why it needs rules.
Yeah,
you know, and it's beautiful, it's awesome, but it's also dangerous. And anybody who deals with it, like, it's just like, even as a 49-year-old, I laugh. It's like, wow, that's really strong. That's why we have rules, because we can be stupid and crazy about it. We can hurt lots of people, but we learn to live within that. Then we can give that as a free gift that we give to our spouse, as a total gift of ourselves. But if we just run rampant and it is corrupt, but it's beautiful, it's good. Sometimes that's been lost with people about it, because it's just easier to label it as bad. Don't do that. No, it's very beautiful, but also very intense, and it can be dangerous. So we need to be very intent about that, because it's so beautiful and so wonderful.
Because like the rules, they're not really like there to restrict you. It's just they're there so like it's like a guideline of how to live a happy and a very enjoyable life. That they're there so that you can be able to live gracefully and or live a happy life, because the rules that people have, when you go past those rules or you break those rules, you kind of run into all these problems and things like that. And there, all these people that come before you, they've placed those rules there so that, you know, it's a guideline so that you can how to live. That's why I find the Catholic Church with all these rules and things, like the Ten Commandments, is that they figured out how, through Jesus and God, and how to live a happy life, and then by following these rules, they'll lead you and guide you on, and through Jesus. And
Not only a happy life in this life, they help you to be ready to live with God forever in heaven. Mm-hmm. You know, this life is just
Gone. here or there.
If all you have is this life, that comes really quick where there's got to be something more than just this. Mm-hmm. But this life, when we understand it, it's like high school. I remember having this discussion a few weeks ago. Why are we doing everything in high school? Yeah. High school is like this. You know, you live high school because high school is not the end. Mm-hmm. It's a means to an end. You do high school because then it prepares you to do other further education. It prepares you in life. It's imperfect. It doesn't do everything the way it is. But if all you had was high school, I would wonder why more teenagers are not killing themselves. Of course, high school is not where you're ending. Hello, everyone. This is our first try at doing podcasting. And so the newbie, Aaron, and I, it just ended recording after an hour. So stopped abruptly, but and I debated whether to shave off a little bit there at the end, because we did develop and talk about, it continued on about the meaning of life and making sure that, you know, the deep meaning of life, how it makes a difference, not just living for the here and now, but living for a lot longer in the eternal view. But in the spirit of having a conversation in the long form where we have a debate of lively minds, I thought it was important to just leave it just the way it is. Enjoy. I hope it's a good discussion that helps you to understand more about Christianity, about the Catholic Church through hockey, and the other kind of sidetrack conversations we had, which were awesome in all the different ways. And so we are grateful and hope you enjoy.